This is XTP Media.
With aviation being predominantly male orientated, most of that kind of caters towards males, and they kind of stay in their groups, which makes aviation quite an isolating experience for a girl. So I think kind of being able to adapt in that way would be great.
Welcome to the latest episode of Extended. For takeoff. So, here are your hosts, Peter Johnson from XTP Media, Gareth Stringer from Global Aviation Resource, and Tim Robinson from the Royal Aeronautical Society.
Hello there, I'm Peter Johnson, and welcome to episode 102 of Aerospace Radio Station, Extended. Today, we're joined by General Aviation Pilot and STEM Ambassador, Ellie Carter. Ellie, welcome to Extended.
Hi.
It's great to have you on the show. I feel like I'm talking to a media sensation doing my research for this. You've appeared on everything, TV, radio, international media, national press, and in, of course, the aviation industry media as well. Let's start with your ambition. Where do you want to go with your career?
I'm keeping my options kind of open as such. I love the idea of getting into stunt flying, test flying, but also doing various stuff on the media, presenting and film stuff. I've really enjoyed that.
Yeah.
So I'd love to do that. So I'm kind of just keeping my doors open and seeing what happens. But I think anything on along those lines would be great.
Right. Okay. Now, I read on the Runway Girl Network that you were able to identify a 1930s Vickers wildebeest when you were a year and a half old. Was this the dawn of your interest in aviation? Oh, tell us how it all started.
That's actually quite a creepy story. I couldn't read at the time, and my parents had some cigarette cards on some aeroplanes, and I just ran and pointed at it and said, "That's a wildebeest." And I don't know. I didn't really know what it looked like until I checked the other day, and I was like, bloody hell, how the hell did I know that?
Yeah.
But I think I've always been fascinated in flying, evident from stuff like that. And I'd be up at schools and stuff, and I'd be looking at the planes flying over because you're in a low flying zone.
Yeah.
And I don't really know what sparked it. I just always wanted to fly. So when I was 9, I decided I'd write a letter to some pilots of a top secret aircraft, the U-2, and ask if I could see it, which seemed like a great idea at the time. And luckily, they actually let me go and see the aircraft under cover at 3 a.m. in the morning. And they kind of then started me flying. So I have to thank them for pretty much everything.
Yeah. And there's a clip of that on the internet somewhere, the BBC interview with you. And you were able to describe all the controls in that cockpit as well, which I thought was pretty impressive. And I think listeners can probably hear that, you know, you've had a passion since you were young, but you hit the headlines last year as the youngest solo pilot of a single seated aircraft in Britain. Now, you've also flown solo in gliders at 14 as well. What drove you to achieve these, what is almost to me, and probably most of the people listening, an amazing achievement?
In all honesty, I don't know. I just wanted to fly. And when you have a passion for something, you want to do so much, you kind of can't get enough of it as such.
Yeah.
So I'd fly constantly. And I first started power flying, which I realised is kind of a weird way to get into it. But I then met a glider pilot and she was like, "Oh, I'm gliding." And so because I couldn't solo or officially get lessons for powered aircraft at that time, I then went to gliding. And gliding was a really good stepping stone to be able to get me to solo and then kind of bridge the gap between being able to start lessons.
Yeah, it was a question I was going to ask you a bit later, actually, because I was thinking about that gliding experience. I mean, many moons ago, I was in a glider and I found it a fascinating experience. But as a qualified pilot, do you think that gliding experience helps you today?
I think it helped me with judgment and stuff along those lines. But obviously, I'd already been flying beforehand, so maybe not as much that it would have helped other people. Although I think it's a really great way to get into aviation, and I think it did help me with the judgment and has made me a better pilot for it.
Now, you're quite an impressive pilot, because I've been following you on social media, and there's a fair bit of coverage on that. But I think one of the things that's very obvious is how your father, Neil, has been very influential in your life. He's made a lot of sacrifices, from what I can see, to support what you describe as your passion to be involved in aviation. Tell us a little bit about the role of your father in your ambitions so far.
My dad has been absolutely incredible. For starters, he kind of drives me for hours to airfields and then sits and eats cake all day. I'm sure he's not grateful for. But he's also been really great from the fact that he wrote me two books when I was younger and I was getting some negativity towards my enthusiasm with aviation.
Right.
So he wrote me two books about three girls all following a route into aviation in 1903. So it was really nice to be able to kind of follow them through their journey. And it was a really good inspiration.
Yeah.
But then we went on to write some films, and the one film he just produced with an American filmmaker has actually won awards all over the place. So that was definitely well deserved.
Right. Now, is he a pilot? He isn't a pilot, is he?
No, he's never really thought of being a pilot at all. It was just kind of random. I'm the only person in the family that really had that dream.
Yeah, that's really interesting, because normally it's an elder or a sibling or somebody like that that gives you that passion. It's amazing that you've managed to foster that all yourself, really.
Yeah, I have no idea where it came from. I don't think anybody has any idea where it came from, but I'm not complaining.
So let's talk about your training and your qualifications. Tell us about how you trained the aircraft that you trained on, and let's talk about the aircraft you fly today a little later.
So I trained at Dunkeswell in a Cessna 152 and a Citabria. So I did the main PPL on the 152, and then a couple of weeks later I finished my tail dragger rating in the Citabria. So now I actually fly Piper Cub, which is incredible, along with the Cessna 152 in certain times.
Yeah, now that's a star in itself on your social media feed. Tell us a bit about the aircraft that you fly, that Cub. It's got a good history from what I can see.
Yes, it's a 1943 Piper L4, and it actually saw action in D-Day as a liaison plane, which is incredible. It's really humbling to be able to fly an aircraft that was flown in World War II. And it's even more amazing that the pilot that owns it actually trusts me to fly it.
Well, you know, you've got your qualifications. Why not? Let me ask you, you've got your PPL. What sort of issues do you face in things like insurances? Are there any challenges on that front, given your age?
I think given your age, it is a little bit more like with a car. And also being relatively, I'm gaining experience quite fast, but still only passing my PPL a year ago. It's definitely a little bit more, but actually the insurance isn't too much.
And what about other expenses? Flying is not the cheapest hobby. And whilst we've talked about passion, you know, it's probably going to be in your career somewhere, I would have thought. How do you manage to support yourself with all this flying? Lots of day jobs and odds and ends?
It's definitely quite difficult, especially being a student studying full-time and traveling 4.5 hours a day. It doesn't have much time, but I have been lucky enough to do certain film stuff and presenting stuff, which I really, really enjoy. And that kind of gave me some money. When I was younger, I decided it would be really entrepreneurial to collect fossils from Charmouth Beach and sell them on eBay. So that over time kind of accumulated into a little bit of money. And I kind of ended up funding my flying is kind of riding a wave, that you kind of get your wave and then you could fly a bit, and then it was kind of working to save a load more money and then you could ride it again.
Yeah.
But again, I've got two accessories, and one person kindly enough gave me £1,500, wow, which was incredible because that kind of kept me going for a little while.
Wow, okay. So you mentioned Dunkeswell. For those who don't know, that's down in the southwest of England. Is that normally where you fly from? Or what do you tend to do in terms of your current flying in the Cub? Do you fly locally? Do you fly to other airfields? What's Ellie's normal sort of flying pattern?
I do a bit of everything. I fly the Piper Cub from a small farm strip called Eggersford, which is incredible. I fly that to places like Bodmin and other airfields, Compton Abbott the other day.
I missed you. That's my airfield. Sorry, I interrupted you. I love Compton. It's a great place.
And then in the 152, I fly from Dunk as well, and I fly a bit all over the place, some local flying. And I also fly from Bodmin, and I'm hoping to do my aerobatic rating out there soon.
Wow. Okay. So given the world that we're in today, we're recording this in early June, obviously COVID-19 has affected the sector a great deal. How's it affected your flying?
So obviously I couldn't fly for an awful lot of time, which was kind of awkward because of the currency issues, and there's still certain places that are not open because of the currency. But I am lucky that there's a Piper Cub that I'm insured on, so I can now fly that around solo, which is incredible. I've taken my family a few times, which, I mean, it's the first time I've actually managed to get my mum from flying me since I terrified when I was nine. So it's not all lost, but definitely for that kind of 7-8 weeks it was not the best.
No, okay. Now how was it? I saw you're quite active on, particularly on Twitter, on social media. I saw that post about your mother. What were your mother's thoughts about flying with you?
My mum originally was like, yeah, I'll come for a flight when I was nine, and me and this other pilot decided it would be a great idea to do whiff a deals and wing overturns. And then she wasn't so keen on coming flying with me.
Yeah.
And again, a few weeks ago, we kind of just strapped her in the plane. We're like, okay, you're going to come with me. And we took her for a flight, and I kind of just explained everything to her. I spoke to her a lot, kind of pointed everything out. And by about 5 minutes, she was kind of loving it, and she's now flown me 3 times.
Wow. Wow. And where is your favourite place to fly over? When I flew, I always had somewhere that I enjoyed flying over and seeing. Do you have anywhere special like that?
I do love Dartmoor, and I also love flying over the coast, flying down the cliffs and stuff. That is brilliant.
Yeah, yeah. And do you fly over home as well? Is that somewhere that you get to go over very often?
Yeah, I have flown over my house quite a few times, but it still doesn't beat the coast.
No, it doesn't. The sea's wonderful. Let's talk about the aviation sector as well. You've talked about several airfields there. You fly predominantly from a farm strip. But what's your view about how you see general aviation coming back? There's lots of talk on social media about how much damage you know, this terrible virus has had by people stopping flying. How are you seeing it? Where do you think things are going to go?
I'm not completely sure. I think that maybe for some clubs it could actually be particularly hard because not having the training, which is a large part of those kind of incomes.
Yeah.
But as flying as a whole, a lot of it can be done solo or with family members. So I think the impact wouldn't be as bad as maybe some more commercial areas, but I think they're still going to be hit pretty hard.
Yeah. Now, talking about commercial areas, you've had a bit of support in terms of a mentorship program. A major airline gave you some support. Was that last year? I couldn't quite make out the dates. How does that work? Do you see that as being something positive for your career going forwards?
Yeah, a big part about that mentorship is really useful because it kind of encourages other young people into aviation, and especially girls, which there are still only 5% of girls in aviation, and we definitely do need to bump that up.
Yeah.
So it kind of shows other girls what's available and how a career in aviation could go. But alongside that, it's really useful for me because they kind of take me to places that I can see, and it just gives me a whole idea for kind of how I could get into the airline industry, what kind of training options are available. And from that aspect, it's really useful because it makes the whole picture so much clearer.
Yeah. And you have a mentor who helps you, but you've also been supporting others yourself, some young women in aviation. How's that going? And what do you feel you can offer to some of those young girls and young boys coming through with an interest in engineering, in aviation and STEM subjects?
Definitely I can offer a bit of advice being kind of going through that as pretty much the only young girl around a lot of the time. But also being quite isolated as a young person, it's kind of quite nice to be able to have someone to talk to and kind of meet up with and stuff like that, which is really great.
And who's Ellie's role models then? I've seen you talking about people from the past. Who do you admire? Who do you look up to?
There are quite a few. Obviously, the older female pilots such as Betty Coleman and Amelia Earhart and Amy Johnson, they're all incredible. But also, my dad has always had a big interest in Japanese history. And he told me about a woman artist and carver that was called Bon Shoujo. And she was kind of in a man's world, and I kind of found that really, really inspiring. Also, Dame Steve Shirley could only study botany at university, but she managed to start a computer company, which is absolutely incredible.
Are you fascinated by aviation and its history? Are you hungry to expand your knowledge? Then you're ready for The Aviation Historian. A compact format quarterly journal, The Aviation Historian is a cross between a magazine and a book. It uses the best authors and the best picture sources to explore the less well-known paths of the history of flying. It's created by experienced, award-winning former Aeroplane magazine editors Mick Oakey, that's me, and Nick Stroud, so you can trust it for quality, accuracy, and sheer passion for the subject. The Aviation Historian. We're print, we're digital, but we're not in the shops. Order us online and find out more at theaviationhistorian.com. Are you ready for it?
Europe's premier aerospace radio station, and you are listening to Extended.
And why do you think, you know, we mentioned that 5% figure in the UK for females in aviation. Why do you think that is? What do you think we can do about it? Where do you think the future lies for women in aviation?
I think the future for women in aviation is really, really good. A lot of people are really, really supportive towards women now, and that's great. But I think to an extent, we need to kind of encourage girls from a younger age. Still with kids, it's kind of boys are given Lego and girls are given dolls. And I think that kind of automatically steers people in a certain direction. But also having that kind of, the British population is very good at kind of talking to people in the same groups. So with aviation being predominantly male orientated, most of that kind of caters towards males and they kind of stay in their groups, which makes aviation quite an isolating experience for a girl. So I think kind of being able to adapt in that way would be great.
Now, looking at some of the pictures that you've posted on social media, it's quite interesting that point you just made about girls being isolated. There's quite a lot of pictures of you looking quite isolated, actually. Do you feel, I don't mean that in any sort of negative way, you know, walking to and from the aircraft and things like that. Is that just the sector, or do you think people feel uncomfortable because girls are coming into to aviation more? Or do you think some of the, dare I say it, the more elderly individuals in the sector don't quite get it yet? Is there something in that, do you think?
I think it's probably a mixture of all of those reasons. Definitely the elderly, they've grown up in a completely different era, and it's totally understandable that it's such a different kind of environment than what they're used to.
Yeah.
It is definitely quite isolating. Quite often I'm the only girl, the only young person. Mm. And so I think in a way it's kind of quite difficult for somebody that's maybe older to come and make conversation, because there's just so, it's so different.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Does that mean that you sometimes have to initiate those sorts of conversations and discussions?
Most people are really, really good. It's also kind of hard being a young girl, because I kind of have different interests to the older people. We share flying, which is great, but it's still that kind of segregation that's kind of hard.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And if you don't mind me asking, how old are you now?
I'm 17.
Wow. I thought you'd burst through that 18-year-old birthday, obviously. Not yet, not for a while.
It's not until the 28th of November, so
Wow, you are doing well. Now, I've also seen some of the subjects you're studying and been frightened half to death by some of the maths you're doing. Tell me, what subjects are you studying at the moment?
So I'm doing my A-levels, and I'm doing computer science, maths, further maths, and physics.
Wow.
They're all quite hard.
Yeah, I did look at some of it and think, well, that's impressive stuff. So how's it going? How's the studying going? I know I've just disturbed you off of one of your lessons. A lot of that's being done online at the moment. They're tricky subjects to do individually, I would have thought. How are they going?
Yeah, so I haven't found physics too bad, because I really, really enjoy physics. It's kind of something that I find fairly easy as subjects go. As for math, some of it's great. Other things is not so easy to learn on your own. We were just doing integration by substitution, and that really wasn't fun to learn on your own. It's meaningful to have a teacher there.
Yeah.
But it's mostly going okay.
So what's the next step after A-levels for you, Ali?
So I do want to go to university, and I quite like to study aeronautics and astronautics.
Yeah.
Or aeronautics engineering.
Where are good places for doing that? Where are you looking at the moment?
Southampton's the only university that offers aeronautics and astronautics.
Okay.
It also has a flight school, which is great.
not that that's going to be anything to judge it by, but yeah, that's cool. Where do they fly from?
I think they go down to Boscombe Down a bit.
Okay. Yes. Wow, that would be cool, wouldn't it?
That would be great.
And have you flown from anywhere particularly impressive like that?
I got kind of think. I've flown a Geraldton Air Show when I was younger.
Okay,
that was really fun, because I then had an engine failure on the way back.
Gosh. Okay, tell me about that. Tell me about that. How did that, what happened?
So I actually flew in an L3 Ronca, which is the only one flying in Europe, I think, which was incredible. And then it was kind of weird, because on the way up, the pilot that was flying with me kind of joked, I haven't had an engine failure in 6 years, I must be due. And then the next day we had a vapor lock and we had to divert into Merrifield.
Yeah, you say that like it's, oh well, we just diverted. Were you worried?
No, I found it quite enjoyable at the time. Actually,
did procedures kick in?
Yeah, I think so. You kind of get trained for that, so you kind of know what to do. And I also had another pilot because I was younger, so he kind of also knew really what to do, and it was a really good learning experience.
Yeah, I bet. And I suppose taking that forwards, is there anywhere particularly that you would like to fly to or fly over that's in your to-do list?
Really, for me, my to-do list is kind of fly to as many places as possible and do as much as possible. So I'd love to fly to all sorts of places. I did go to America when I was younger, so I'd love to go back there and maybe fly around as a qualified pilot, which would be great. And I'm also due to fly to France, which I haven't flown into. I was supposed to fly in last year, but I had my GCSE, so I couldn't do that.
Yeah.
And I've also flown the Cup to Belgium, so I'd love to be able to do that again as a qualified pilot.
Yeah, I did see something on that when I was looking through social media. You appear to be all over the place in terms of your presence. Is social media important to helping you get that message over?
I think social media is really good to convey a message to younger people. Mm. It's something that I think is kind of missed in aviation. And I think it's a really, really great way to kind of show the positives sides of it and the kind of experiences you get to see that maybe you wouldn't see by other places.
Yeah. Now, you've been quite humble in not mentioning this, but I'll mention it. And you were awarded the Hilda Hewitt Trophy by the British Women's Pilots Association earlier this year. You've also received lots of other plaudits. Not only you've mentioned your qualifications, your flying qualifications, tailwheel, your PPL. What's next for Ellie for flying? What's the next stage of your flying career?
So pre-coronavirus, I was actually due to start my aerobatics rating in a super decathlon, which would have been great. So hopefully I can do that again at some point.
Have you done any aerobatics yet with anybody?
I have done a bit of aerobatics. I've done some odd bits, and I also flew with John Beatty in a chipmunk when I was younger, and that was really great to do some aerobatics with him.
Wow, and you've got the tummy for it, have you?
Yep, I love it. It's great.
What after that? Where's Ellie going after that? I know you've got the world ahead of you. It's a change in place. You know, we've seen a lot of changes in the aviation industry. The commercial industry's shifted. Do you think you might end up in one of those airlines potentially as a step in your career?
Yeah, potentially I could. I'm kind of keeping my doors open for that reason.
Yeah.
But I'd love to kind of get into maybe a niche like test flying and stunt flying, kind of do some crazy stuff, which will be great.
Can I ask you if you've got any preferences? I'm allowed to ask you any preferences for aircraft types or airlines?
Not so much airlines, because I don't really know too much about the airlines. I've only ever flown a simulator for an A320, which was incredible, and it was really, really fun.
Wow.
But flying at the moment, the Cub is definitely incredible. I love it. It's you can't really beat the Cub when on a summer's day with a door down.
Yeah. And just tell me a little bit about when you're flying the Cub. Obviously, it's not got the most complicated controls and technology, should we say. How are you keeping abreast with what's going on in the industry in terms of where technology's going?
I do have quite a scientific mind, so kind of looking at the Google and kind of seeing what news updates there are is kind of big for me, because it's my passion as such. But the Cub is great for its kind of lack of technology as such. It's really, really fun, and it teaches you how to fly by the feel of something rather than being able to look at an instrument and go, okay, that's right or that's wrong. It's really, really useful.
Yeah, we had Arthur Williams on the show a few months ago, and he was talking about flying older aircraft and how that really teaches you to respect them, to understand them. But it also, he was talking about it almost becomes a part of you as you fly that aircraft. I mean, I've not been lucky enough to fly those. I've been a bit more standard in the aircraft types that I've flown. But how do you see your skills proficiency moving on to aerobatics changing? What are the sorts of things you're looking to learn and develop in terms of your flying skills?
With aerobatics, somebody once told me that aerobatics really teaches you to fly an aircraft. Mm. It kind of teaches you what to do at those kind of critical angles and all that stuff that can make you an amazing pilot. So from that aspect, it will be really, really great to do, as well as just being fun. Yeah. But also, I'm going to do my upset training and variable pitch propeller kind of in that, which will be really great. Upset trainings, I think it's becoming kind of compulsory for any airline pilot, so it'll put me in a good stead for then.
Yeah.
But really, I just want to kind of become as good and well-rounded pilot as possible. again, that will open my options when I'm older for a career. But also, it will kind of, in a way, having all of these experiences and being able to do as much as possible makes you a better pilot and, in my opinion, a safer pilot.
Yeah. So, with all the wisdom that you've given me in terms of your flying experience so far, for some of those younger people out there who potentially are thinking about a career in flying, potentially looking at their flying training, what sort of advice would you have for them?
In any way possible, just kind of get involved. I spent a lot of time hanging around airfields and like cleaning hangar doors and brushing hangars out for free flights, which was incredible because often you've kind of created a relationship with the person you fly with and you kind of become really good friends with them, which is incredible. And that's what happened for me with a cub. But also start gliding at a young age. I think it does teach you how to fly and kind of teach you judgment. And also you can solo younger, which is incredible. But I think just trying to get involved in any way possible, talk to people, apply for bursaries and just try your hardest. It's hard to get into, but it's worth it.
Yeah, it certainly is, because every picture on that I've seen of you, I think you're smiling and that says it all. So, Ellie, where can our listeners find you online?
So I'm on Twitter, which is at DragonGirl94. I'm on Facebook, which is Ellie Carter, and I'm on Instagram, which is Ellie Carter 74.
Right. Where does Dragon Girl come from?
Oh, God. when I was 9, I decided to write a letter to the U2 pilots and ask if I could kind of see the aircraft. And they got me into aviation, and they had kind of some nicknames. So the U2 was also called the Dragon Lady, and they also called it the Article. So I had two nicknames, the Dragon Girl and the Article, from them.
Wow. It's a good one, actually. It's a good, great one to take forward, and it certainly stuck. But Ellie, it's been an absolute delight to speak to you. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you. It was great.
G'day. I'm Dave Homewood of the Wings Over New Zealand show, New Zealand's only regular aviation podcast series. The Wings Over New Zealand show covers all sorts of aviation topics, with a New Zealand flavour but an international appeal. From interviews with veterans and aviation personalities, to topics like military aviation, warbirds, air shows, historians, authors, museums, aviation events, and much, much more. We have an extensive archive of episodes that you can go back to, and there are new episodes coming out all the time. Search for the Wings Over New Zealand show. Oh, and by the way, we love Extended. It's a great show. Well done, guys.
We'd like to thank White Hearts and Peter Dixon for their contributions to the show. You can find Extended now on Stitcher.com, UKpodcast.com, thepoddirectory.com, and of course, free on iTunes. Our legal policy and use of our material can be found on our website, and please do ask before using anything you hear. The program's produced with a Creative Commons license. You can find Tim at RAES Tim R on Twitter. You can find Gareth at Gareth_Stringer on Twitter. And you can find me at Nascot Hornet on Twitter. You can find the program on Twitter and on Facebook at Aviation Extended. That's all one word without the leading E. And with the arrival of the music, it's goodbye from me, Peter Johnson. Remember, stay tuned into this frequency. That is, of course, Aerospace Radio Station Extended.
Extended would like to thank its partners, Global Aviation Resource, the Royal Aeronautical Society, and XTP Media, for their support in helping to present and produce the programme.
The cockpit's very cramped, you've got leg restraints on, you're sat on a seat that's got explosives in it.
Just taking me on the trip of a lifetime in a F-18F Super Hornet.
Thanks for listening to Extended. We'll see you next time. And don't forget, we want you to contact us. So get involved at aviation-extended.co.uk is the email address you need. Extended!
is XTP Media.